The following program is brought to you by your friends at TheForce.net.
Oh, Maxi bit the Force.
And RebelScum.com.
You Rebel Scum.
The galaxy is listening. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is a ForceCast Microcast.
Size matters not.
Brought to you by TheForce.net and RebelScum.com.
You may fire when ready.
Star Wars Cantina.
Where are you going, Master?
For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Hey guys.
Hey there.
Hello.
Welcome to Chicago and welcome to the ForceCast, Dan Madsen.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
And Chris Macht.
The ForceCast again.
Yes, yes. Our old friend, from director of The Force Among Us. We had such a good time out at your red carpet event.
Yeah. Yes. It seems like years ago, actually.
That was a great time.
That was a great time.
I got a great picture. Dan, you should see this. It's up on the Force.net. It's a picture of Chris addressing the crowd. He's in his tux. He's up on the stage at the Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh, I've seen
Boulevard.
It. Doesn't he have a drink in his hand?
He had a drink in his hand.
I have a mug, a beer.
That's what it is.
I should have a martini glass.
I've seen that one. Exactly.
And I look at that picture and I just sing to myself, luck be a lady tonight.
Like Jay LaGaia at the Celebration. At Celebration, remember?
Yeah,
he was out there with the
just
big band
like
and
Jay LaGaia, except without the musical talent.
Right.
Sorry. Well, I mean the singing ability, of
right,
course.
No, I can't sing like Jay LaGaia.
You can. You do
can
play some.
I can play guitar like him, but yeah, I can't sing like Jay.
And you drum too, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, of course, you guys are here because Dan is in town. We spent the morning together. We headed over to the Museum of Science and Industry here in Chicago, and we checked out Star Wars, where imagination meets science. What did you guys think of the exhibit, Dan?
I loved the exhibit. It was very cool, in fact. You know, I like the interactive stuff mixed in with all of the props and the costumes and the items and everything. It actually, you know, kept my interest, and I noticed that people of all ages, I noticed the kids were going crazy, and the adults were just fascinated by it, too. So it was a great exhibit. I was impressed more than I thought I would be, to be honest.
How about you, Chris? What did you think of the show?
I liked it. I liked it a lot. It was, I liked the fact that they had the film with Hoth, comparing it to Norway, and the film with Tunisia. Tatooine, comparing it to Tunisia, you know.
That's
I thought
cool.
That was cool.
Of course, because you've been out to both places.
Yeah, so it brought back a lot of memories, you know, and I kind of understood the environment they were talking about. And I loved it because it wasn't so crowded, you know.
Right. Yes.
I hate going to those things opening weekend where it's like you feel like you're in a sardine can, you know. And
right.
I believe you said that they were trying to do it a different way. There's like time slots.
Yeah, it's actually reserved time to go see the show. So when you buy a ticket, you know exactly what time you're going to go in there.
That's
and
right.
It's a great way for them to control the crowd. So you can really get in there and enjoy the exhibit without feeling pressured by somebody coming up behind you, waiting for their turn to see it.
Well, you know, and we were standing there, the two, looking at the land speeder. And the land speeder, you know, things like that are really cool because you sit there and you realize, and then they showed behind that on a screen, they showed the scene as they were filming it. And it really is kind of cool to sit there and go,
it's very surreal.
Yeah, it's like, that's the actual thing. It's like standing there touching an artifact from the past, you know? And how many people have been inspired and seen Star Wars and watched that land speeder and wish they could have one, and then there it is, the actual item right in front of you, and it is, you know, it is surreal. I don't know how else to describe it.
Speaking about the land speeder, you know what was cool? The land speeder, the Kenner land speeder.
Oh, man.
You know what the coolest thing about it was? The button on the front that you pushed.
Oh, yeah.
And you had to, like, finish opening the lid, and they had that sticker in there.
Yep.
That was...
you remember you had to put the sticker on it.
Yeah.
It was, and you got the sticker, and I got mine on crooked, and I was always pissed off
Dan,
about that.
You and me together.
I didn't get it on just
right. I didn't
even
attempt putting the stickers
on. And that bugged me forever, I swear.
Question is, do you still have that?
Yes, I do.
Chris?
You know what? I never had it. Glenn had it.
Always Glenn. He hoards everything.
He had the land speeder. I didn't really have, the only cool thing that I had was the Star Destroyer. Where the chamber closes, and not a lot of people had that one. Glenn didn't even have that one.
I didn't have that either.
And you can look inside the plastic window, and it was a red light because the window was red.
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing that.
And you could see Vader inside. Yeah. That was the coolest toy. Yeah. But it was just, it didn't look good because it didn't look like a Star Destroyer, but the chamber was so cool.
Oh, yeah.
Know?
For those of you who are wondering who Glenn is, Glenn, of course, is your cousin who is featured in The Force Among Us. He is the main collector featured, in my opinion. He is the expert junkie. Collector featured.
A big fan of the show. A big fan of the show, for sure.
A big fan of his. No,
Hi, Glenn.
We met.
He's probably listening to this.
He is listening to this.
Hello, Glenn. But he hooked up with myself, Jason, and Pete out in Star Wars Celebration 4 in Los Angeles, and it was a pleasure to meet him and everyone associated with The Force Among Us film. We've just had the finest time hanging out with you folks.
Well, that's cool, man. Thank you.
The museum exhibit, we went there because Anthony Daniels was very happy to find out that his good friend Dan Madsen was in town. Of course, Dan, before we go further, let's just talk really quickly and throw out your cred and talk about what makes you an important member of the Star Wars community.
I guess if you want to consider being important, I don't know about that, but... I took over after Lucasfilm closed the fan club down back in the early 80s. I had already been managing and running and founded the official Star Trek fan club for Paramount Pictures. And so Lucasfilm had seen what I was doing with that and asked if I'd be interested in taking over running the official Star Wars fan club. We didn't call it Star Wars then, we called it Lucasfilm because there was no idea when Star Wars would happen again. Anyway, to make a long story short, I agreed, got on board, got licensed to do that, and was the president of the official Star Wars fan club for, let's see, almost 14 years. I founded the Star Wars Insider magazine and managed and produced the first Star Wars celebration in Denver, Colorado. And I guess my most favorite thing was I got a cameo part in episode one is... a Kadoo handler that runs out at the end of the movie and grabs the reins of Jar Jar's beast. And so that, in a nutshell,
that's it? That's all you got?
That's all I got.
Give me something
collector
a little more,
extraordinaire
please.
At least one point in my life. But other than that, that's my claim to fame. I can't
no, you know what?
Take
I got,
any more credit for anything
that's all
else.
You got, right?
That's it.
Okay.
But Dan, there are so many people that I talk to that always say that the insider is not the same without you. You know, well, I don't even know if you realize that.
I don't, but that's actually very nice that people say we put
I get that all the time.
Heart and soul into the magazine, you know, as our passion, and you know, I miss doing it. I love doing it. I had great fun with John Snyder to all the editorial and the comments, and I did a lot of the interviews. And you know, I do the updates with Rick McCallum. I started that way back when he was doing the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles.
Yes.
When he had a lot of hair.
When he had a lot of hair, exactly.
I
right.
saw some footage of him at the exhibit, actually,
yep.
talking, and
yep.
he had a lot of hair.
Yep, that's
I
right.
I mean, it was almost like Shag, you know.
Yeah, he had
know?
A big bushy
like, wow,
hair.
That was,
yeah.
I remember those.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when Special Edition came out, he was doing a lot of talks.
Yeah, he was. That's
letting,
right.
Letting his freak flag fly.
Well, 10 years, man. I'm gonna look a hell of a lot different.
I don't want to look at the back of your head, and I don't want you to look at the back of mine right. either. Because I can tell you, I ain't as hairy up there as I once was.
So let's talk about the early years of the Insider and how that ball got rolling. How'd that evolve? It came out of the Lucasfilm fan club newsletter.
Magazine. Yeah,
magazine.
That's right.
Right.
Well, you know, I was all. The funny thing is that it's kind of a full circle because. When I started the official Star Trek fan club, what I was trying to do was do for Star Trek what I had seen being done for Star Wars. When I was a kid, I loved the Star Wars fan club, and I joined the club, and I got the Bantha Trax newsletter, and
Bantha
I loved Bantha Trax. And every time one would come out, I would just be so ecstatic, and I kept saying, you know, Star Trek has never had an official fan club. There are all these fan groups, but they've never had their own official fan club that's put out a quality little... newsletter like Star Wars has done. So I decided to do that for Star Trek, and I did it and started it all up. And so lo and behold, you know, as time goes on, I get, you know, the opportunity to do Lucasfilm. And so what I took was the newsletter and decided to make it a full color kind of a newsletter. And that started with the Lucasfilm Fan Club magazine. And actually, Anthony Daniels was the very first interview I ever did, and he was featured in that first issue. And so over the years, it just kind of built and grew and grew. And then we started doing a little bit of product and merchandise. And before you know it, it grew into a full-fledged, full-color magazine. We started having a full catalog of merchandise. We started developing our own exclusive products. So in addition to selling everything under the sun that all the licensees had to offer, we had our own product line of exclusive product. And then at some point when we started realizing that George was actually going to be starting on the new movies, we decided with Lucasfilm to change the name from the Lucasfilm Fan Club magazine to Star Wars Insider. And so we all put in names of various sorts, and I don't even remember who actually came up with the name Star Wars Insider, but it was the one that was picked by all of us and all of Lucasfilm, and it got launched. And so the magazine ran under my leadership from the time we founded it in 1987 till 2001, when I sold the business to Wizards of the Coast.
Right, and it's passed hands a few times since.
It's passed hands several times since then.
But it's still going strong.
It is.
What do you think of the current incarnation of Insider?
I think it's great. It gives me great pride to see something that we started still going and still thriving and providing Star Wars fans with, you know, great information, and that Lucasfilm still finds it a valuable asset to continue to keep going. It's not exactly the way I would do it today. I still think there are things, like I would have given The Force Among Us a feature article in the magazine.
Yeah, right.
You know, stuff like that.
They're trying to sell us full-page ads
exactly.
for thousands of dollars we can't afford.
Exactly.
You know?
But yeah, there's things I'd do differently, but it makes me happy to see, you know, something that we started continuing on today. I would rather see it be that way than have it die and never be around anymore. So
when the transition happened from Lucasfilm magazine into the Star Wars Insider, all of a sudden it was on newsstands.
Yeah.
How did you feel when the first time you walked into a bookstore or a grocery store and you saw it there, your hard work up there for ready for public consumption, not just the Star Wars fans who knew where to find it?
It was a very cool feeling. It wasn't the feeling that one might think, only because our Star Trek magazine had been on the newsstand for several years prior to that. Mm. So I was able to walk into Barnes and Noble or, you know, any grocery store chain and go to the magazine rack, and boom, there it was. And it was a result of our success with the Star Trek magazine on the newsstand that our national distributor said, you know, we think Star Wars could even be bigger, and they took it on, and it went. You know, at its peak, we built the official Star Wars fan club, and it's never reached this number since. It reached 184,000 members, was the most we'd ever had. And our the Star Wars Insider on the newsstand, I think it was our issue right before Episode 1 came out, we had 500,000 copies on the newsstand.
Wow.
So it was massive. And I don't know where it is now, but I know it's come way down.
I think it's like 130 now.
Is it?
Yeah, it's not 500,000.
Yeah.
So that those of you keeping score at home.
There you go. And that's, you know, I take great pride in the fact that it got so high.
The first issue that I had seen, because I read that magazine, of course, when it was the little, and you guys used to ship it with the, like the paper bag cover on it.
Yeah, because we realized it was for collectors and we didn't want it to come all bent up and beat up.
Right.
And I can't tell you, even though it was in a paper cover and then we put it in plastic bags, that were sealed, we still got so many people that would say, my magazine got ruined. It's all bent up and everything. And so we'd have to send them out a new one because we knew it was important to people.
Oh, that's obviously a fan run. That was a fan run organization.
Yeah,
I remember in after Episode 1 had come out, I had seen I can't remember what issue number it was for those of you keeping score at home. But I remember the cover. It was Queen Amidala. And it was like a yellowish cover, like a gold cover. Uh-huh. And I saw that at like the Dominic's or the Jewel, and I was like, oh, this magazine's getting big.
Was that right before Episode 1?
I think that was like right after.
Yeah, that like was the during the time issue. When we were hitting our peak of like 500,000 magazines on the newsstand.
And I think, you know, maybe, too, one of the things that had maybe made the number not as big now is probably, I think the internet, you know.
The internet has definitely had a effect on it. You know, I mean, now, back then, you know, the Insider was the only place you could get a lot of information. I mean, we'd have updates and things, and now, you know, information is...
That was a million and one websites.
Oh, yeah, it's with, you know, in the heartbeat, you've got all these different websites that are.
And they didn't have StarWars.com when you had the magazine.
No, they did have Star Wars. It was just starting, actually.
It was just starting.
Just starting. And and as it started to begin, you know, there was this kind of discussion as to what part of Star Wars would be given to the fan club magazine, what part would be given to StarWars.com. And it was right towards the end of my tenure with it that we started having those kind of discussions.
And so you didn't have like hyperspace and all that?
No, they didn't even exist then.
I think that's fairly new too.
That is new.
A couple years. Yeah.
I believe that popped on the scene between episodes 2 and 3.
Yes, that's very new. Which is cool because I think, you know, I think that's something different. You know, Lucasfilm always tries to do something new.
Well, in the internet age today, you know, it wouldn't make sense to do the fan club exactly the way we did it back then. So
if
I were doing it today, I would be doing it in a way similar to what they're doing. I would be, you know, you've got to make it, you know, cutting edge for the audience today.
Yeah, I know with hyperspace, you know, you can play videos and stuff. I mean, it's definitely.
And the magazine is no longer a part of the fan club subscription. They split that up.
Right.
Okay.
You used to have the magazine as part of the fan club membership. Now it's $14.95 to join Hyperspace.
Right.
But the magazine is separate. You can subscribe to it separate.
Yeah, I'm not even sure right now if I'm subscribing to the magazine or if I belong to Hyperspace.
Yeah, it's a little confusing.
Both or neither. Yeah. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing.
So
I haven't subscribed in a long time. I did have a dream, though. This was around like this time of episode, of Celebration 4, that Mary Franklin was chasing me around the Glacier of Hoth.
Nerd.
And she was trying to get me to subscribe to the Star Wars. And I'm like, Dan Matson doesn't run that magazine anymore. I don't want to subscribe to the Insider.
Does Mary Franklin know she's in your dreams?
Yeah. No, she isn't.
Well,
credits,
she does
though.
Now.
She does now. But it was a good dream. It was a good dream, you know?
Oh, boy. Okay. Where to go from Chris Rock's dreams about various employees in Lucasfilm. At least we didn't talk about what she was wearing.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Okay. Let's move forward. So, essentially, when Lucasfilm absorbed the magazine and the fan club, that's pretty much when you were out.
That's right. I actually, when I sold the business to Wizards of the Coast, in 2001, I stayed on for a year as a consultant and was paid as a consultant, and I kind of helped move the whole thing into Wizards of the Coast. And then by the end of that year, Lisa Stevens had kind of taken over, at which point then shortly after that, not too long, Lisa Stevens bought the fan club. They handed it over to her from Wizards of the Coast. And she had it for less than a year, I believe. And then Lucasfilm just decided, that's it. You know, they weren't satisfied with it in either of those places. So they decided just bring it back in-house and do it themselves.
Right, right.
And that's where it's been since.
And that's a business decision.
Yeah.
It seems like it was stable for so long.
It was.
And then all of a sudden with technology and after you left, things started changing a lot. You know?
That's right. It was fun though. I have to say it was some of the best memories of my life working with that community and with Lucasfilm. I mean, you know, I was telling, who was it? Maybe it was you or somebody else, Chris. I said, you know, back in the day when I was doing the fan club, the kind of access we had to the sets and the actors and things would be like unheard of today. I mean, when I was covering various Lucasfilm projects for the magazine, for instance, I went over to the set of Willow and spent a week over there. And nobody monitored me. I was walking around the sets, just looking around, you know, and they would have the publicist on the set there would say, you know, are you ready to talk to Val Kilmer? I'd say, oh yeah. And I'd walk over to his trailer and sit in there, and he'd be eating his Chinese food that his cook was making him. Interviewed him. I interviewed everybody on the set of Willow. But, you know, and then Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, I spent a week and a half. And, you know, today they would never let me just go free. I wandered everywhere I wanted to go. I could wander on the set here, wander on the set there. I interviewed Spielberg and Ford and everybody. And today it's like I was talking with my good buddy Patrice Giraud over in France, who runs the official French Star Wars fan club. And I said, well, are they going to let all the fan clubs, you know, go to the set of Indiana Jones so you guys can cover it for your magazines? And he's like, no, they're not even letting any of us go to the set. It's a closed set. They're not going to let anybody. And he said, Dan, the days of you know, your days when you guys could just go anywhere and do anything are over. They're not going to let you do that anymore.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's too bad.
Do you think it's maybe because too many people were taking advantage of...
I think it's primarily because of the internet. Because now today, yes, you take your camera phone and you can go there and click, take pictures of everything, you know, and within instantaneously, you got it all over the internet. You got the storyline, you got this, you got that, and it's harder to, you know, and the movie business isn't what it used to be. So, you know, you want to have this giant opening weekend. And if you ruin the surprise and you get all these elements out on the internet, you know, they feel it'll ruin that grand opening weekend. So
the dark side of technology.
Dark side of technology.
Yeah. Maybe so, but on the other side of the coin, you know, how much publicity is bad? I mean,
yeah,
you know,
right. Well, publicity bad is good publicity. Publicity is good publicity.
I mean, you know, everyone points at a movie like Snakes on the Plane, which was,
absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
It had nothing going for it.
That's
until
right.
The internet buzz picked up.
Yeah.
I was telling Dan, I just saw Snakes on a Plane for the first time a couple weeks ago.
Really? Why?
You know, why did I wait that long?
Because
Mace
right?
Windu's in it. He wanted to see
if
exactly. Mace Windu was in it.
You know, it was one of those movies where you're about to crash out for the night and you're like, oh, this movie's just starting. And I watched it and I was amazed by it.
What was that mean? Good or
I
bad?
I mean, it was good.
Really?
Yeah. Have you seen it?
No, I didn't see it. Snakes on a Plane.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah, it's like, well, it's one of those movies you don't put at your top, you know, list to go see.
Yeah.
But it was, man, I wasn't expecting it to be that good, you know?
Was it intense? I mean, really?
It was kind of intense.
Did it keep you on the edge of your seat?
Well, I was telling you about, you know, it was borderline horror movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was pretty crazy. I think every time I go on a plane after watching that movie, I'm going to think about that movie. You know?
All right. A good call for late
now,
night.
Now, wait a minute.
Cable.
I have to get on a plane tomorrow. I'm going to be looking into my seat going, oh.
Yeah, right.
So
that was pretty crazy.
Let's talk about the axis that you had.
Yeah.
Especially during episode one.
Sure.
You were in episode one,
right.
Of course. At the end of the film, for those Force casters out there who don't know, Dan Madsen is the Naboo citizen who races up and holds the reins of the Cadu when who is disembarking from that
Jar Jar.
Creature? It is Jar Jar.
It's Jar Jar's Cadu.
He gets his foot stuck in the
right.
In
everyone's
the
favorite Gungan.
Exactly right. Absolutely.
And you're the man holding on to the thing, dressed like Friar
elf.
Tuck, I guess. Okay, you know.
I look like an elf. In fact, one of the funny things is that in my early days, I was acting, and I did a lot of roles. And I'm a little person for anyone who doesn't know that, and I stand about 4'2", and so in my early days as acting, I played so many elf and alien roles, it's not even funny. And so, you know, when I was told I would be able to come over to the set in London and spend a week and interview everybody on the set and cover it for the magazine, I was very excited. And then I got the second call, and they said, by the way, we're going to let you be an extra in the movie. And I was like, you know, what a dream come true. I mean, can a fan even imagine that? So when I got over, they actually measured me for my costume. And I got a costume custom made to me, and you know, I put it on and I stand in the mirror and I'm like, oh, not another elf, because I was in green from head to toe and I had these little pointed curled toed green shoes. And so, you know, I felt like a fool actually walking out there to the set, because you were in the building and then you had to walk all the way out like to this big giant football field where the Naboo scene was, where the big parade scene was going to be filmed. And it took like, you know, almost 5-6 minutes to walk out there from the big building where the sound stages were. And as I was walking out there, at this point I had kind of long hair, and I was walking past these two people, and I remember them looking at me, and as I walked by they go, I didn't know Willow was in this movie. And they were serious. They really thought I was Warwick Davis walking past them to go out to this thing. But and I wasn't supposed to have a cameo in the movie. And so when I was standing out there with the big crowd, the assistant director, I saw him over there talking and with George. And all of a sudden I see him kind of looking around, and he looks over at me and he points to me and he goes, would you like to be, he says, would you like to have a cameo in the movie? And I'm like, okay, you know, and I see him look back at George, and George, and he points to me, and George smiled because George knew who I was. And he smiled and said, yeah, that would be good.
Wow.
And so... you know, and then I heard him say, you know, it would be good to have a little person do this. And so, you know, I got this part, and Rick McCallum walked over and smiled and patted me on the back and says, are you going to get to have a part in the movie, hon? I said, yeah, this is really cool, you know. And so as the scene started, you know, I was told to run out to the middle of this giant area, and there was nothing out there. And there are all these guys walking in white overalls, and they were all the Gungans. And that's where the Gungans were going to be. Wherever they were standing was where a Gungan was going to be. And so I walked out there, and the assistant director says, you know, I said, what am I doing? And he says, well, you run out here, and you grab the reins of this big, giant beast. And I said, well, what is it? What does it look like? And he said, it's a cross between a chicken and a dinosaur. And he says, when you grab up to it, he says, pull it. So it looks like this thing is trying to not, you know, get away from you. And so I did that. You know, I must have done that like 8 times. Ran out there and jagged, you know, grabbed it, like, you know, and trying to make it seem like there's something pulling on this fake rope I had. And so I got that done. I spent a week, you know, there, and I probably spent 2.5 days just doing that, running out there, doing that thing. And then I had to walk like I was walking it back off the thing. And so at the end of that week, I was planning on going home. And they said, well, you can't go home. And I said, why? And they said, well, we need to get more footage of this whole area, this whole scene, and you're going to be in it. And unfortunately, we can't do it till next week. And the sky has to be the same way it looks today when we were doing it. So they put me up for a whole nother week and a half over there in London. And I stayed and did another 3 days worth of running out there, grabbing the reins of this thing. I had no idea what it looked like. And I was kind of lonely over there because I had nobody over there. I was all by myself. And so Anthony Daniels, who became a good friend before that time, was very nice and picked me up and took me around to a lot of the historic sites in London and everything and kind of entertained me while I was there. And that was a very special memory. You know, I mean, and the reason I'm even mentioning this whole story was because for me, probably the definitive fan moment of my entire life with Star Wars was that moment when I ran out there into the middle of this giant street of Naboo, and there's nobody out there at this point, just me. And I stopped and I looked up, and up at the top of the steps there is basically the entire cast of the new movie. And then over here is George Lucas sitting there, and he's got this kind of this microphone thing. He's going, now reach up for that creature. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, is this really happening to me?
Yeah, it sounds very dreamlike. Yeah.
I'm out here in the middle. All that's out here is me, and there's George directing me, and there's the entire cast up there. I thought, you know, this is not real. This cannot be happening.
That's something we all dreamt about between 1983 and 1999, when there were no Star Wars movies. How fantastic would it be if George brought it back and I was in it?
Oh, yeah.
And you are out there in the middle of the Theed Naboo Street.
Absolutely right. It was like a dream come true.
The Kadu, was it friendly? Was it tame? Did it bite? What kind of food did it
like? It had stinky poo. I had to go buy it. I keep calling myself the Naboo pooper scooper.
A question I wanted to ask you, and I could never figure this out. I've seen The Phantom Menace 1,000 times. Were you wearing your glasses?
Yes.
You were.
they didn't. Well, no, actually, let me rephrase that. In pictures that they took of me on the set, I had my glasses on. But when I had to run out there, I had to take them off and set them on the edge of the Theed Palace thing there. And there was this Naboo guard that was standing there with me. And he was quite the jokester. So he kept hiding my glasses every time I'd come running back. But I was practically blind without my glasses. Mm-hmm. And there was a little tape mark out there in the middle of the street because that's where I had to run to. Mm-hmm. And when I'd see that little tape mark, I had to stop because that's right where I was supposed to stop and then reach up and grab this thing. Well, without my glasses, I couldn't see a thing.
Sure.
So I ran out there, and that's part of the reason why we had to do it so many times, because I kept running over my mark and they go, cut! And I'd look down, and the mark was like, you know, 2 feet behind me. So
you just ran past the canoe.
Exactly right.
Please turn around and face the canoe.
You're grabbing his tail, please. Yeah. So that was awkward, but
okay. So it's the photos I've seen and the insider.
In all the photos, I have my glasses on because I put them back on, and that was after the fact, you know. But actually, if you watch the movie, if you were able, you know, on the movie screen. You know, I'm huge up there because, you know, on the movie screen, you know, I'm not little, but when you watch it on the TV, I'm this little bitty guy running out there.
Well, I was just curious to know if you were the only bespeckled character in the Star Wars universe. But
you know, the funny thing is that after all of this happened years later, I got a trading card. A Decipher made a customizable card game.
So your character has a name.
And Lucasfilm approved a name for it. It's called, his name is Dams Dana.
Dams Dana.
Dams Dana. D-A-M-S, the first name. Dana is D-E-N-N-A. And Lucasfilm officially approved that name for my character. So I guess he actually exists now in the Star Wars universe as a character with a name.
There's some sort of formula they use to twist up the names. Yeah. To, you know,
they
take
said
your
that
real
had some of my name in it. And
yeah,
it
sounds like
it's got Dan in somewhere in there, you know, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the name they gave it.
So obviously, you know, anything I tell you about my favorite moment as a Star Wars fan, kind of, you know.
I think it's probably every bit as important.
Of course, but, you know.
That was a once-in-a-lifetime event.
That'll
never, ever happen again. And I'll be, you know, I was telling you guys earlier, I said, you know, I tried to buy my costume from Lucasfilm, and they wouldn't sell it to me. Apparently they said it had to stay in the archives, but I thought it would be a cool thing to own and have as an heirloom to pass on to my son and to his son, and, you know, three generations down the line, they could say, well, this is the Star Wars costume great-great-granddad wore as an extra in the movie, but wouldn't it be?
Hey, you throw it on anniversary night.
That's right. There you go.
Hey, sweetie, Dams Dana's home.
That'd be good.
That's right. You want a little piece of the cadu?
So I'll tell you what, if we have any seamstresses out there and you can whip up a Dams Dana costume,
I'll buy it.
There you go. You have a client.
That's right. I could use one.
Freeze frame the end of episode one, The Phantom Menace, and look for Dan's cameo. You can't miss it.
When we did the thing at the school yesterday, John Tenuto had played that footage for the audience.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now, that's the reason Dan Madsen, of course, is in town, is because yesterday was a big, big event over at the College of Lake County up in Grace Lake, Illinois.
Yeah.
Why don't we talk about that? What was that all about, Chris? What was the, it was another great contributor to The Force Among Us, John Tenuta, who teaches a course of sociology up at the College of Lake County.
Yes,
and he teaches a course of sociology that applies directly to Star Wars.
Sociology of Star Wars.
Perfect title for a perfect course. Now, let's talk about what went on up there in Grays Lake yesterday.
It was pretty much a talk for the students, you know. It was an afternoon with you, and
yep.
I joined you for the second hour.
Right.
It turned into a pretty long discussion. Yeah. It was like a 2.5 hour thing, but it was...
Interesting show.
The coolest thing about it was I got a chance to talk to college students, you know.
Who had seen the film.
It was the first panel that we've done where it was like, who knows about the film, and the whole place raised their hand. Mm-hmm. And it was like, all right, let's just go right into a Q&A, you know?
No, they're good students of John's.
Yes.
Yeah,
I mean,
yes,
if
yeah.
you want a passing grade, you better raise your hand.
Absolutely. So it was pretty much a talk about Dan's history with fandom and his challenges and struggles, you know, through, you know, where he's at today and his experience with working with both Star Trek and Star Wars. There were a lot of Star Trek students there as well, because he teaches, John Tenuto teaches the sociology of Star Trek as well.
Right.
It's kind of a Star Trek weekend, you know?
I know.
We did a panel today over at the Creation Con, and...
The whole audience was Star Trek.
You asked the audience, you're like, okay, who prefers Star Trek more than Star Wars? And it was like, everybody likes Star Trek more. But the coolest thing is that they were there to come and...
To learn about The Force Among
Us.
Yeah,
it was like, wow, what an open-minded group of fans, you know?
And you ended up selling several, you know, copies of the DVD to these people.
Yeah. It was like, wow, they couldn't get enough of Trekkies. So,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
There's no reason why a person can't enjoy Star Wars and Star Trek
Absolutely.
At the same time.
That's what I kind of told them. I said, you know, in my experience interviewing people, that it is a myth that Star Trek fans hate Star Wars fans and vice versa. You know, it's I don't know. I don't know where that came from. I think it came from that poster that somebody designed. It was the Millennium Falcon or the Star Destroyer shooting down the Enterprise.
Oh, yeah.
Star Trek sucks.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
And, you know, so the talk was really cool. It was very cool to talk to the students. It's one of the things that I'd like to do is go to Columbia and talk to the film students.
That would be cool. You ought to do that. You ought to talk to them about that, because that would be valuable.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Columbia College Chicago is one of the finest film colleges.
I love Columbia College, you know. And, that was pretty much, I mean, it was an afternoon talk.
And I think something like that with Chris would be very interesting, because as I was saying to him and actually to the audience today, is that, you know, what Chris has done with The Force Among Us is really kind of rather unique. I mean, a lot of people might have a dream about making their own movie or making a documentary or whatever it is that they want to do with a film. But to actually take that and then turn it into reality and find a way to put a crew together and to find the money to put into the budget, to travel all over the country and interview these people to the point where Chris has now, and he's got, you know, the finished thing here. You know, it's gone out now to the public. I mean, that just doesn't happen every day.
No.
It's a very, very unique thing. And, you know, your story is a success story, Chris. And, you know, I think that a lot of...
60 minutes. That's what I want to get on. You know?
Independent filmmakers can really learn
violin,
from it.
If they have the little 12-year-old violin prodigy...
What the heck?
Why the heck wouldn't they have The Force Among Us on there?
Really, I think your story could be an encouragement to a lot of independent filmmakers who are saying, you know, I don't know how I could ever get it done. And you could say, let me tell you how you can get it done. It takes tenacity, it takes passion, it takes hard work, it takes investing your own money, it takes, you know, tirelessly pushing and promoting it to the point of exhaustion. But if you're willing to do all of those things, you can potentially have your dream come true and do it.
I remember when I was waiting tables and this guy said, what are you going to school for? And I said, I'm going to school for music business. He said, oh, wow, the entertainment business, that's really hard work. And I'm like, you know, waking up in the morning is hard work sometimes.
Yeah,
you know,
big time.
I mean, what about all the people that, you know, have the jobs they don't like? That's hard work. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know. I don't know what it was. I guess not having a long-term goal paid off. <You know? laughs> it just took the idea and ran with it, you know? Once in a lifetime opportunity, for sure.
I'm Morley Safer. I'm Andy Rooney.
And I'm Chris Mock, and you're listening to 60 Minutes. Is that
All right, well, that's going to wrap up the first part of our conversation. Thanks a lot, Dan.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
Hey, anytime.
Be sure to go to theforceamongus.com and pick up your copies, your DVD copies of The Force Among Us, a great documentary that Chris Mock has directed and featuring Dan Madsen. And we'll be back soon with part two of this great conversation. We're having fun, aren't we, guys?
Absolutely.
You got it.
For theforce.net and rebelscum.com, I'm Jimmy Mack.
May the Force be with you, bro.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of the Force.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.